Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Brian Bowen. He is a passionate entrepreneur and practitioner in relentless pursuit of personal, professional, and business growth. He has a deep love for learning, creating, and connecting, and he is driven to understand the human experience better and to help others thrive. He works with people to improve their lives, and this is not just his life's work, it is his purpose. He is a seasoned acupuncturist with over 22 years of experience. He holds multiple certifications, including massage therapist, postural alignment, personal trainer, high performance coach, and power MBA. Throughout his career, he specialized in treating multiple complex musculoskeletal conditions and integrates a wide range of techniques. He is a board certified continuing education provider with NCCAOM, offering advanced training across the US, Canada, and the UK. He's also founder of Dao Needle Therapy, a specialized technique and system using Dao Needle to effectively treat acute and chronic pain, as well as scar tissue. He's also the founder of Integrated Health, established in 2001, and he created Ouch Ointment, a Chinese herbal pain relief formula with CBD, and Better Human Company that focuses on high performance coaching for individuals and teams. He also hosts the All Things Good for You podcast and is a spa owner with Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa. He is certainly an innovator at heart and the inventor of the Omni 360 face cradle and other cutting edge therapy products. Brian Bowen, welcome to SpondyCast. How are you today?
Great, and I'm so sorry I made you read all of that. That was so long. I'm so sorry. I hope the listeners aren't asleep already.
No. You've done a lot of stuff, and you can tell like there's a central cord in there. So I'm not going to complain. And today we are going to talk about acupuncture, some of your Dao therapy work, Dao needle therapy, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear the background of like how you got to where you are and how you it led you like to do all of this integrative work around acupuncture and massage therapy.
Yes.
Tell us about you.
Yeah. So there was a thing in the bio clearly that's not updated. So it's 26 years that I've been in this field now. So my story is a little goofy. A lot of people that get into complementary medicine and go on this journey usually get there because of sometimes some of their own crisis or something that's happened. I actually grew up in Missouri. And so I knew I always wanted to get out of Missouri. If you live in Missouri and you love it, great. I needed to be somewhere else. So after high school, I moved to California to go to school. And actually, when I was there, one of my friends that I became friends with, he was getting ready to have a knee surgery, and his mom was very much into holistic medicine. And so she kind of forced him to go try acupuncture, and he had about 3 treatments and avoided the knee surgery. Now, I don't know exactly, looking back, what all was going on with his knee at that time. But anyway, I was mesmerized by this idea. And so I kind of kept looking at it and seeing it. All of a sudden, a TV commercial popped up with an acupuncturist, you know. And so I called, I remember I was 18, and I called an acupuncture supply company. And I'm like, hey, I need to order some needles. And they're like, what size do you want? And I'm like, I don't know, what sizes do you have? And they're like, well, are you an acupuncturist? I'm like, no. Are you a student? No. And they're like, well, you can't order acupuncture needles. And I'm like, well, what do you got to do? And so that was literally my first journey of just even finding out that there was a school for traditional Chinese medicine. So that was my first intro. And then fast forward, I don't want you to give you all the long story, but my journey ended up taking me to North Carolina, where I actually went to a massage school in North Carolina. And my anatomy instructor was an acupuncturist, reintroduced it to me. And I'm like poking myself and reading books, and then about 3 years later, I ended up going to school in Colorado for acupuncture. So
that's amazing. That's you know what they say, though? I always say this too. My day job, I'm an entrepreneur, and it's never a straight line. Like, it's always, I think of it like a really powerful EKG.
Yeah, and it should be. So that, to your point with that, you know, I always kind of like paid attention to like, where am I supposed to be? And the universe kind of, you know, kind of gave me a hint or two, and sometimes it smacked me in the face. And so I remember I moved to North Carolina because I was driving around and James Taylor came on the radio. And literally at that time, I was thinking about, where am I going to move to go to massage school? And James Taylor came on singing Going to Carolina in My Mind. And so
those
little funny things that just take you where they take you. And then when I originally went to school, was going to school in Florida, and the acupuncture school went out of business. And so I moved to Colorado from a friend that told me that she was like, hey, I think you belong in Colorado. So I'm like, okay. And checked out the school here and came to school. But then my plan was to be here 5 years. And then fast forward, I have 3 kids, 2 dogs. I've been here since 1999 and have businesses and all that stuff. And it just kind of captured me. So I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting there. okay. So let's talk a little bit about your business. So you have done a lot of work in your career and gained a deep understanding of traditional Chinese medicine and modern practices related to musculoskeletal, call it relief. How do you see the balance in your work between like ancient wisdom and modern science?
It's a good question. I mean, first of all, even going back before I went to acupuncture school, and I just bring this up for a reason, I'm a curious person. And so when I get into it, I kind of want to keep going and exploring, especially if it's something that I'm passionate about. And so even when I was doing body work or manual therapy, there was a lot of variety of techniques that I started to learn, whether it was structural integration, cranial sacral therapy, trigger point work, myofascial release, you know, all of these different modalities, you know, within the massage or body work frame space. And so the reason I bring that up is because even each one of those lends itself as a tool to be able to have the right fit for the right person. Because every patient that comes in the door, there's not a one size fits all. There's not one tool that's going to fix everything. And so I kept wanting to learn more, because some people that came in, maybe they had fibromyalgia and they couldn't do a lot of deep myofascial release, right? So it's like, what is something that's applicable to this person? How can I, what tools do I need to utilize in this situation? And so same thing with acupuncture. So as I went down that path of learning body work and all the different modalities within that, then when I went to acupuncture school, same thing. There's different styles of acupuncture. There's 5 element, there's 8 principles, there's stuff with special techniques like Dr. Tan. And so there's all these different techniques within that. And again, the reason those are important to learn is because when somebody comes in and we're doing a intake with somebody and we start listening and doing our exam from what we see, from what we hear, the questions we ask, we have to start funneling and trying to decide out of all of this for what they're coming in for, their personality, what's going to be the best tool for them to start with. And then a lot of times then we start integrating those tools together. So am I going on the right? Am I on the right track to answer your question?
Yeah, no, you're totally on the right track. Cause I was going to ask next, like, once people get in your office, do they usually come to you through like a traditional treat or provider, or do like, and I'm very curious about, I'd actually love to do research on this, but do people come through a provider or having a conventional practitioner that they're working with and then they show up, or do they show up because they need help and they work with you and maybe you incorporate or send them along their way based on what you understand? So like, I'm curious how that works.
Yeah, there's another option in there that you didn't throw in there. Sometimes if it's a male, sometimes the wife's forced them to come in. so that is another option. That's a good question. And all of the above are the answer. So we have, you know, allopathic, you know, physicians that refer people in, and for different reasons, right? We have endocrinologists refer people in. We have, you know, primary care refer people in. So it's not just specifically, you know, work and respondees. So it's kind of all over the place. But, you know, some people come in because they have been down the more traditional path, and maybe they've hit some roadblocks or they've exhausted their options. So a lot of times some people come in and they've been to a lot of places, and they're all of a sudden it's like, this is all my hopes in this basket, right? Like, this is, we know you can fix it, because there is this like magical mysticism idea, you know, with traditional Chinese medicine. But then we have to bring people down. We're like, this is a process, you know, where we have to, I'm learning about you as we're working together, you're learning. So I have to get to know how your body responds. So it's definitely not a one and done treatment. And so, you know, for some people, you know, who are out there that are thinking that, I just want to make sure that you're aware that that's not the way it works. It is a process. Usually I'm treating somebody 2 times a week to start. And then depending on, you know, what they have going on, and if it's chronic or acute, then we kind of phase into that. But I want to go back to the previous question as well, because it's really important when somebody comes in that the practitioner is always asking about all the other things that they've done, right? We want to know, because I want to know, that helps me see how your body is responding, right? Even though within like massage, if you say I've had massage and it aggravated it and made it hurt, well, you still have to like look at that for what it is, because sometimes it's the style of massage or the communication between the practitioner and the patient and, you know, all these other variables. So you still have to kind of dig in there. But, you know, I surrounded myself and always have in environments where I worked with other, you know, really, really great practitioners, from osteopaths to chiropractors and things like that. And at my clinic, we are very integrated. So we have both complementary and allopathic, you know, within integrative health. And so we have primary care, we have chiropractors, we have ashiatsu practitioners and massage and acupuncture. And I also like all my toys. So I have lasers and shockwave therapy and cryo chambers and hyperbaric chambers and all these things, because again, if there's a certain space for the person, that sometimes we have to blend some things together. And keeping in mind that it's really important, there's a passive side and there's an active side. And so I'm very much like to integrate both of those together. And so the active piece is very important, whether it's something you're coaching somebody of a lifestyle change that they need to do, right? Whether it's if somebody really has high stress levels and they're operating out at 8 out of 10 most of the time, clearly there's an inflammatory process, right? Your body's releasing a lot of cortisol. So sometimes I'm giving homework for that. I'm a big postural alignment guy. So I did a Goscue. So I'm giving, you know, corrective exercises for people a lot. It's Goscue.
What is that?
Goscue. Yeah. Pull it up. So he's pretty famous. He's been around for a long time, and he's been mentioned by presidents, and he works with professional NFL people, and Tony Robbins loves him. Like, so he's out there. But the Goscue, and there's other people who have either maybe had a modality similar or piggybacked off that and have made their own modality or advanced it, if you will. And so there's certain philosophies. And so think about this. One philosophy I think that's very important when it comes to treating pain, whether it's from an autoimmune, whether it's from situational, whether it's from an acute trauma, whether it's from a postural pattern that later compounds, is position versus condition, okay? So the position of our body can dictate or lead to the condition via the compounding effect. And so when we're talking about, you know, this inflammatory disease process, I looked at your website and I really appreciate the fact that you're tackling it from many different angles, from the gut, from stress, from allopathic, from complementary or alternative medicine, because it is a compounding effect. So you can have, you know, some inflammation start off because of stress, right? But then you have poor posture, then there's a postural stress. You're not moving enough. Motion is lotion. You stop moving, you stop regenerating and getting that hyaluronic acid to move through the body and lubricate, you know, the sinews and the tissue and the inert tissue and contractile tissue. And then you have a compounding effect there. And then maybe you have a little gut stuff going on and you have an inflammatory process there and you have a compounding. So this is why it's important to look at it from many different aspects and to see, again, passive versus active, where's there an opportunity in your life to remove one of the logs that you're stoking the fire with, right? So, you know, it's important. We're not, can we just give you good input to help change the position of your body to help improve the condition, whether it's mobility, or is there something else, the way you sleep, the way you sit? I just went on a tangent. I really apologize.
No, don't
apologize. You don't know what you're going to, you don't know what you're going to get. So
this is what we're trying to get. This is the best stuff. Right, yeah. I mean, I was just peeking at the Agoscue. But I'm with you, right? Like this is, when you said like the compounds, I was sitting here thinking like, I've been sitting at my desk since like 6:30 this morning. Yeah. When I get up, I'm like 90 years old because I try to walk and it's horrible. Yeah. But I do believe it. And it sounds like the Agoscue method is a lot about movement, right? This is, and the one thing I read it just quickly, it was like filled with a lot of really good common sense. Like let's move and keep our bodies. I more and more am referring like and trying to live blue zone, like if you watch
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a big piece of it. Not to say like, I mean, there are tons of people, millions with this disease that it has compounded by no choice or action of their own, which is the unfortunate side of the disease. Right. And I think it's, you know, like, and then it gets into, sorry, now I'm pulling you off on a
tangent. Do it. go.
Going back to that, the like the conventional medical treatments, I'm assuming you see a number of people who are like on a biologic for rheumatoid or spondylitis. And does that interfere with how you treat people at all?
No, the great thing is with, you know, with the majority of stuff, there's always going to be some contraindications at some point. But with the majority of the things that we're doing, everything really does complement each other without, you know, taking away the effects of if somebody's on a biologic or something like that. Of course, you know, there are certain conditions, not necessarily, you know, in this space, but certain conditions where we do have to be more mindful, especially if we're doing any sort of herbology, you know, with people. So in traditional Chinese medicine, you know, it's an umbrella. Under that umbrella, you have cupping, you have acupuncture, you have herbology, you have Tuina, which is a type of massage, you have Gua Sha, which is a scraping technique, and a variety of other things. And so when people come in with something that's chronic or an autoimmune, we really do want to try to do some other stuff. The acupuncture by itself is great, but maybe we do need to do some more stuff where we're moving. And I do want to come back to that piece around Agoscue and that conversation where we're doing something. But a lot of times we are also doing herbology, Chinese herbology specifically, because the herbs also complement the acupuncture, because it's the same. Like if you have an acupuncture point, it's designed to do a certain thing. Well, we have an herb that's designed to do that same thing as well. So if you, there's like nothing in allopathic medicine really that you take like once a week, typically, right? It's like, no, right. You have to take it. You take your statin every day or you take whatever. So you can't do acupuncture every day. And sometimes when we're trying to get ahead of something, we need more information to keep that momentum going, you know, in your body. So right. In Chinese medicine, arthritic conditions, if you will, and a lot of inflammatory process come back to what's called B syndrome. And B means painful obstruction syndrome. And so there's five different main types. And it sounds really weird, but you have wind B, damp B, bone B, heat B, cold B. And then you can have a combination of those syndromes. So you can have like cold damp B or wind heat B or so forth, right? Cold bone B. Right. So there's different formulas like Duhoji Shintong or Shintong Zuyutong and these kind of weird names that will kind of complement that. Yeah.
But it's kind of like the idea, I'm a big Ayurveda person. Like it's a lot. I mean, it's like we're made of earth, air, wind, fire. Is this kind
all
of
the
like
elements.
All the, we're elemental. Is that kind of the thinking behind the B syndrome?
A little bit. So the five elements, when you talk about those elements, there's very much the five element, you know, acupuncture and Chinese medicine. And a lot of times when we're going off of that model, so Chinese medicine is that it's a big systems theory. And within that systems theory, you have all these frameworks or you have smaller systems theories. And so five elements is one, you know, four levels, six stages, eight principles. There's all this interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So that the Ayurvedic is more like five element. And I typically do that style when I'm working on more emotional stuff, right? More psychological, emotional stuff is when I really hone in on more of the five element piece. When I get into like the eight principles and stuff like that, that's more like yin yang theory and heat and cold. So a very simple thing that if you are somewhere between maybe 50 and 60 years old, and maybe you're going through menopause and you're having some hot flashes, a way to think about this is yin is like this very cooling, nurturing type of substance or energy, if you will. And yang is like very warm and invigorating and moving. And so when you go through menopause, you start to get depleted in yin. And yin anchors yang. So if yin's depleted, the yang rises up and creates heat. And so you start to sweat. So you would give an herbal formula that helps tonify or fortify your yin. And also maybe we'd do some heat clearing type of herbs or acupuncture. And so when we're getting we should talk a little bit more about what we're here for today as far as the listeners and talking about.
Yeah. But if I could just make a request to get you to scale whatever you're doing around hot flashes, that'd be great.
Yeah, right. I'll send you some herbs after this.
I actually eat this stuff like from the Ayurvedic doctor, which is like dirt. I call it my dirt. And I throw it on the back of your tongue and you choke it down.
So to that time, like how you tie all this stuff together. So maybe you come in for acupuncture and you're getting treatment for that. But then you also the practitioner's job is to educate you what foods, because food is medicine, what foods out there are triggering this? Obviously wine or alcohol, right? So that's a more yang warming type thing. I'm not going to say it. Like, I'm drinking a beer right now. No, I'm just kidding. Spicy food, fatty foods, fried food, like these things, you can almost feel like that's more yang in nature. So you want to have more like papaya and cucumbers and like cooling yin type foods.
There's a lot of us. It's not as easy as you think. Like,
no, it's not.
I'm sure you know this.
My wife is going through. Okay, yeah. Direct me.
Yeah, she's going to kill you for that. Okay, so how does acupuncture, massage therapy, how does it actually provide pain relief?
Okay.
In the process.
So let's talk about it from many different facets. So I'm going to stay really focused here. Okay. So with traditional acupuncture, if you're using the frameworks of things that we just discussed, okay, when a patient comes in, we want to really start understanding like if they fit in one of those kind of B syndromes. So you can have pain from a traditional Chinese medicine from any of those syndromes, any of those B syndromes we talk about, but you can also have it from blood stagnation, blood deficiency, qi stagnation, all these things. So the first important thing is what's called diagnostics and differentiation. So we have our own set of tools to be able to do our own diagnostics and differentiation to discern what we call the root or the branch. The root is the source, the dysfunction, and the branch is going to be the compensations, right? So from traditional, you know, acupuncture, we have to go through that process. And then from there, we identify from our differentiation and diagnostics what the root problem is. And then that gives us our point selection that we're able to do the points to help correct those imbalances. You get those things back on track, you correct the imbalances, and you stop pain. Now, from a more sciencey perspective, if you will. So, and this we'll talk more about when we go into the down needle therapy, but I just want to dip my toe into it a little bit. So from a soft tissue perspective, okay, you have contractile tissue and you have inert tissue. So contractile tissue is muscle, inert tissue is fascia, you know, all of our connective tissue and so forth, ligaments, tendons. And so let's talk about like a constriction from a contractile perspective. Let's say you have your poor posture because you've been sitting at your desk all day long, okay? When you're sitting, all of your joints below when you're standing are shock absorbers. When you're sitting, they're no longer shock absorbers. So your lower discs in your spine become your shock absorber. That's why a lot of people have issues with bulging discs at L5, S1, L4, L5. Now, on top of that, you add a little posterior pelvic tilt. So if I posterior pelvic tilt my pelvis, then it creates me to go kyphotic, okay? These backstrap muscles, your paraspinals, are considered postural muscles. So let's say those postural muscles are under constraint, just tension all day long or for 4 hours or whatever. Eventually, they are going to decrease in the amount of blood flow, oxygen exchange. Muscles need to shorten and lengthen, okay? Because when they're doing that, they're naturally irrigating themselves. They're naturally pumping and moving blood and interstitial fluids and oxygen and all the good yummy stuff. And when a muscle contracts, it takes calcium and some other yummy stuff to cause that to happen. And after a period of time, if it doesn't release, it kind of becomes toxic waste. So when you go, so I always like to tell people, like, if I were to reach through the screen right now and just grab your arm gently and just squeeze it just a little bit, it's not going to hurt. It's going to be weird because I'm grabbing your arm, but it's not going to hurt. About after 10 minutes, I've decreased the amount of oxygen and blood flow to that tissue, and you're going to start to get irritated and a little uncomfortable. If I maintain that same pressure for an hour, it's going to start to hurt. Okay? So picture your muscle is like a strand of, or picture your arm is like a strand of muscle fibers, and all of a sudden that's happening. So we call that a muscle energy crisis. So when we are needling, a lot of people are familiar now with more dry needling, which is a traditional acupuncture technique that kind of got put into a new systems theory using traditional trigger points from Janet Travell. And so the idea of that was to put a muscle in and to get this muscle to fasciculate, literally getting it to kind of release into a lengthened state, right? So that is breaking that muscle energy crisis. So just like in the traditional Chinese medicine, you have blood stagnation, you have qi stagnation, you have pain. So how do we get blood moving? How do we get, you know, all those interstitial fluids moving? Now, this is just talking about contractile tissue. We'll get more into the conversation of how do we get that fascia and how do we get the relationship between that the fascia and the muscle and stuff gliding. So whether it's massage, whether it's chiropractic, whether it's acupuncture, whether it's egoscue, at the end of the day, if it's not moving, we need to get it to move, right? So at the very, very basic foundation, if something's not moving, the more movement there is, the healthier the tissue it is, right? Because it's getting the ingredients it needs to thrive. If something isn't moving for a long period of time, what happens is it becomes constricted and it goes into what's called adaptive shortening. So that tissue shrink wraps, right? And it bonds together. And so the muscle fibers start to kind of stick together a little bit and all that yummy lubricating fluid substance starts to kind of dissipate. The connective tissue starts to adhere to it too. That decreases the mobility in our joints, right? And then when we have things that aren't moving over, going back to the compounding, when we have things that aren't moving for a long period of time, the compounding effect then is inflammation, degeneration, and arthritic changes.
Interesting.
And then death. No, I'm just kidding.
Which one is the IT band? I know that's a totally like wacky out there.
No, it's on the side of the leg. It attaches to the outside of the knee and comes up into the hip. And you have a little muscle that controls most of that called the TFL, or tensor fascia lata.
Okay. That's the worst one. Okay. Yeah. No, that was actually super helpful. So I'd never thought of it that way. Like a muscle, what do you call it? A muscle crisis?
Muscle energy crisis. Yeah. Muscle energy crisis.
It sounds like something you'd see on the news.
Yeah. So there's, and we'll talk more about this in the Tao stuff when we get to the part two conversation. But basically when all that stuff is congested over a long period of time, your sensory neurons go haywire. Right? Because you're changing the intercellular, you're changing like a chemical environment and the thermal fluctuations and stuff. And so these little sensors get stuck in an open position and they get flushed with positive ions. And those positive ions send signals that, oh, shit, something's wrong. Pardon my language. Oops, something's wrong here. So what do we need to do? So when we're actually doing the acupuncture for that hypertone tissue, so hypertone meaning taut tissue or too tight, we're trying to get that muscle to release. This is from more of a Western perspective, right? Which I actually like. I talk more in this terminology to patients than I do in B syndrome. So I'm not typically, you don't hear me saying, well, you have wind damp cold B and we're going to do these points. I'm typically having conversations because this is what they're used to hearing from their physical therapist, from their doctors. And so it's already kind of, you know, mysterious enough for them to be into the office. So I want to familiarize themselves and also educate them on what's happening to their body so that they can understand.
That's awesome. Have you, you've worked on people with spondylitis.
Yep.
Well, first, let me ask you this. What's the most common postural imbalance you see in patients?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I really like to look at the pelvis. So a lot of times, because the pelvic angle, you have two bony landmarks. You have one on the front called the ASIS, which is for your anterior superior iliac spine, and one on the back called the PSIS. And I measure those. And so if it's too far tilted, if this is the ASIS, so this is the front of your pelvis, and this is the back, if it's at an angle like this, then what it does is it causes your back, your lumbar curve, it causes a hyperlordosis, and that compresses the back. So what happens is your quadriceps become too tight, and then all of that lumbar sacral fascia and stuff on the back shrink wraps and gets really, really tight.
So
it'll be too much of a curve. And then mm-hmm. this space, if you take A and B, if it should be here and all of a sudden it's here, now you're compressing your discs, right, in your back. Now, the opposite of that would be a posterior pelvic tilt where the PSIS is lower than the ASIS. And in that scenario, it pulls the curve out of the back. And so you have more of a straight back. And so your spine's supposed to have these curves that one curve goes this way, then the neck counters that. So it's balancing and it's a big spring. So anytime you pull the curve out of that spring, you're going to start to have problems. So you can have low back pain because of an anterior pelvic tilt or a posterior pelvic tilt. And so, and the great thing is there are some common themes. More women tend to have anterior pelvic tilts. More guys tend to have posterior pelvic tilts. I have a whole story about that, but it's probably not appropriate for me to tell on this podcast as far as, well, I'll tell you then. Okay. So I was thinking about this one day because like a lot of times, so if you have an anterior pelvic tilt, one way you can tell is sometimes your abdominal wall will spill too far forward because your pelvis is a bowl. So if you tilt that bowl, you might get a little extra pooch on the front and then your butt sticks out a little bit more in the back. Okay. So a lot of times there, you know, if the pelvis is posterior, then it's almost like you have no butt. Like your butt's really kind of tucked in, right? So I tend to see this a lot more with guys, especially older golfers. I don't know why. But one day I was thinking about why men and why do more women have anterior pelvic tilts? Why men? And obviously one simple answer would be, well, women wear high heels more and high heels are going to cause more of an anterior pelvic tilt. But my son was probably 9 when this happened. And I'm in the bathroom brushing my teeth and he came running into the bathroom. And he spreads his legs really far apart, pulls his pants down. He starts peeing, but he pushes his hips forward and his pelvis goes posterior. So I'm like, oh, because for guys to really hit the toilet, that's how we tend to stand. And women, when you're sitting, the pelvis goes a little more anterior. So I know that part of it is because of the way we urinate. So that's my.
That's so interesting. But I believe it. Like, just knowing, I mean, I used to actually be like that flat butt. I remember the first yoga class I ever went to, she was like, I've never seen somebody who's so tucked. Like, and now I'm like the opposite. I can't seem to find the in-between. no, you're probably onto something. Although I never did stand up to pee.
Well, you can do it. So for women in that situation, a lot of times the quads are too tight. So I give some exercises to help stretch those quads out.
Yeah.
And then for guys, it's a lot of times. So that's what we call the superficial front line. The guys, it's more often the superficial back line, which is like hamstring, calves, stuff like that. And so it's cool because, you know, again, position versus condition.
Yeah. And somebody once said to me, like people with spondyloarthritis tend to have anterior tilt, which is it shortens their hamstrings and then they're tilted forward. So it shortens their hip flexors. Like they have
like
a double
shortens hip flexors.
Yeah. God, that's the worst.
And the spine going back to like when we start having so much restriction, like obviously it's great if you can catch something before there's a fusion, right? Like that's the ultimate, you know, best situation. So what are, you know, what is that tissue doing and how's it holding that, that position or that posture, especially when it comes to fusion and SI joints, right? Like that's, because if those are fused, then the low back starts to take more. So if we can keep our SI joints and things moving and try to keep them as, again, in a healthy state. And, you know, that can be a challenge because we have these muscles on the inside, we have these muscles on the outside, then you have your, you know, these long paraspinal muscles. But the goal would be to decide what tool is the best tool based off the person you're working with, based off the tissue you feel. And then you use that tool to try to get the movement where you need to try to disperse that stagnant tissue. A lot of times when something's constricted for so long, then you start having a lot more of that inert tissue involvement. And we have to get the mobility and motility back in that tissue. Because if you, like the muscles tell the bones where to go, right? So if your muscles are splinting and squeezing your spine and you're restricting that spinal movement, then eventually it's just going to fuse together. And there's people that have that happen, not necessarily having this autoimmune condition, right?
You're speaking to where my head is at right now anyway. But I have a theory, on, and maybe you can validate this or somebody can, and I should ask if we can find a guest on this, but I have a theory that most of us don't engage our core quite enough, don't know how to properly get there. And it perpetuates and exacerbates the condition, like, especially in that lumbar spine, making us like super inflexible. Anyway, that's my
idea. Yeah. No, I think it's good. I think you're right. And you have to look at all these things. And so, you know, like when I'm doing Egoscue stuff with people or postural alignment therapy, there's, you can look at a bottom up approach or a top down approach, right? And so when I'm looking at people, I like to look at their feet. So if somebody is, for instance, pronated, if their arches are really collapsed, they want to turn their feet out, because your body's looking for more support. Because if you're really pronated, then your femurs are going to internally rotate really extremely, and that can put a lot of pressure on the knees and in the hips. So then their feet turn out to give them more base of support, but then you start to change, the pelvic angle starts to change just based off that foundation. So there's so many little things to look at. And so I guess to this conversation, whether it is posture, whether it's diet, whether it's traditional Chinese medicine, whether it is chiropractic, whether it's massage, whatever modality it is, I would just say, get really curious to try to check as many boxes don't therapy overwhelm yourself, but get curious to see if there's opportunity with any modality to have perspective, to be able to take just a little bit of that log off that fire. Right? If you can just take a little bit of inflammation off here. So if you're like, hey, I tackled my gut health and my gut used to be so bad and I used to have irritable bowel syndrome and I always used to have like, oh my gosh, it was so sensitive and everything. And now it's really good. It's like, okay, good. Good for you. Now, what about the posture piece? Is there anything you can correct there? What about that mobility piece? Yeah. All right, good. You tackled that. Good for you. So now is there something else? Right? So it can be overwhelming because not necessarily in this condition, but a lot of times 70% of people hitting roadblocks is there's usually something still in their life that's an aggravating contributing factor, right? So emotionally, maybe somebody has anxiety and stuff. Well, guess what? It's probably their spouse. Could be me driving my wife nuts, right? So we have to change that. We have to change our communication or figure out why, like what can we do to stop that from happening? A lot of people, if they wake up, and this is ridiculous, but it's so true. They wake up and they're stiff every morning without having necessarily an autoimmune thing. A lot of times it's their bed, or they have bad shoulder and they sleep on that shoulder, or, you know, they sit and standing desk were great, but no, people forgot to educate people that standing desk, you can bastardize that too. Like nobody's supposed to stand for 6 hours in one spot. So pretty soon people start leaning. Yeah. they're like leaning like this, you know. Same thing with sitting. So like my philosophy in life is diversification, right? Diversify your movements, diversify the things you're doing in your life. Any one that too long can cause bad stuff.
Yeah, I think it's that. And you made a really good point. Like, can you just take a little off?
Yeah.
Pain or the inflammation. And frankly, now you're speaking like my yin yoga teacher, who's always like, just when we get into these poses, just be curious. Like, what do you feel? And what feels better? What feels worse? And anymore, I may have read somewhere, but I think it's true, is when you start down this road, my estimation is like anything that I'm trying to like really, really work on, I need 6 months for like real results. Mm-hmm. And I think of it like a roll of toilet paper. We're talking about the bathroom a lot.
You know what? I think everybody can connect to this.
Everybody connects to that.
It's a good metaphor.
Yeah. But you like a roll of toilet paper, but like you take one or two sheets off at a time and then eventually it's empty, right? It's gone. And it's that little bit of progress, I think, every day. Okay. So
I'm so using that metaphor tomorrow when I treat patients.
Go for
somewhere,
it.
Somewhere I'm going to break out the toilet paper metaphor.
Okay. Break it out and just be like, don't get jumbo rolls.
Jill told me that she has no toilet paper left.
I actually was trying to figure out what I was in the toilet paper aisle at Target yesterday. Uh-huh. I was trying to figure out what is the whole, and if there's a listener out there that can explain the approach to me, everybody's like 96 rolls for the price of 12. And it's all like, and it's like, okay, at what point do we just admit and say, it's a roll of toilet paper and it's a big one or a small one. And I was just like, who started this marketing where they're all fighting over who has more jumbo rolls in a smaller package? And
well, the person that has colitis is probably thankful for the 96 rolls.
Well, I know, but I'm trying to price it by the sheet, you know?
I mean, well, it's 96 rolls, but then they're like that small compared to like normal.
Well, it's that. Yeah. Did rolls ever come that small? Anyway.
I don't know. Good question.
Okay, so limitations. Let's talk about these.
Yes.
So one thing I want to say, I want to back up because I think there's an exclamation point on this, is what you see for most common is starting to look at people's pelvises, right?
Well, that's when we're talking about like typical postural deviations.
Yeah. Right. And corrective exercise, your advice is be curious and try something and try to take off a little bit of pain each time.
And I would say that was more towards any modalities out there that are safe for you to try, right? So most of these don't have any sort of negative effects. And again, you know, even with acupuncture, sometimes, you know, you can be sore for a day or two, depending on the style that you're doing, but the benefits worth it. So I would say, you know, get curious in that manner, like, you know, list stuff out. Like other like ChatGPT, like, hey, what, go to your website. Your website has great information. Look at some of the things that you're suggesting. If you're stressed out, you need to regulate and get curious. How can I regulate how can I be more parasympathetic than sympathetic? Because if you're living in a sympathetic nervous state, which the world is right now, right? It's pretty stressful. So what practices are you doing? Whether you're having a nice, calm, quiet morning, listening to the birds with your eyes closed while you sip your coffee, that's me, to a meditative practice, to breath work, to yoga, to letting your mind just be quiet. Like there's a million things out there, biofeedback systems, like there's tons of stuff. So get curious, if that's the thing that, so I always tell my students when I'm doing specifically Tao, I'm like, and looking at posture, I'm like, what wows you the most, right? When you look at a posture, what wows you the most? When we're mapping the body out, what wows you the most? So even with yourself, like, just be objective and like, what is like, wow, I got to get that under control, right? That's my biggest log. I want to get that under control. Get curious and try things, you know, and remove a little bit here and there. Then when you have that under control, what wows you now? or what's maybe showed up in the process that you can then tackle, whether it's from, you know, whether you're using acupuncture or massage or yoga or whatever it is. They are all good, yummy things, and they're available. The only thing that's stopping us from trying these is usually a mindset thing. And I know some of them financially, some of them can get expensive, but there's so many good resources now that, I mean, you pop up YouTube, right, for free. You can do a yoga class, or breath work, or Tai Chi, or Qigong. Like, it's all available. It's just a matter of getting curious and trying.
I love that. can we talk about my wow when we do this?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Are we back in the bathroom?
No. It's not in the bathroom, but you've got me convinced I need to like really work on this because I don't want anything bad to happen. Okay. Yeah. So our last question before we sign off today, and we're going to come back for another discussion on a deeper dive into Tao needle therapy. Where would you send people for resources or advice if they wanted to learn more about integrating acupuncture or massage therapy or corrective exercises?
Well, that's a good question because there are a lot of resources out there right now. I would just say, first of all, if you're going to start looking at these things specifically like in acupuncture or something like that, everybody, you know, does require to have a license. So like the NCCAOM has a website that you can find a practitioner and you just put your zip code in. And at least you know those people have gone through certain standards. There's some states still, I don't know what they are up to date, but like Wyoming, I don't think you used to have a license in Wyoming. Like anybody can just do some acupuncture. So clearly be safe, do your due diligence. I always like personally, especially in this space, you know, people, if you're looking at a website for different massage, you know, practitioners, is to find somebody who has a little bit more medical massage training and can look at it from that perspective. You know, but again, it's one of those things you have to learn even that with what your style is. So I would say if you haven't had massage before and you don't know, start light and then work your way up. So you might not want to go for like a deep tissue for your first one because you can get sore, especially if you get inflamed really easy. But there's so many cool toys. I recently, like I have a deep tissue laser I use on people. I'm going all over the place now because I love my toys, but I got this new EMS system that I'm really curious to how your audience would respond to this because I'm having some really good experiences with it. So you and I can chat in the future when I find out clinically how this baby works.
And if anybody's in the Denver area, they can come in for a free trial.
So for free, 100%. My front desk, who doesn't know how to use it, they'll work on you for free. Also, it put me, I'm more than happy. I don't care if you're in this state or not, or if you become a patient or not, but if you want to go to our website, we have a lot of information about the different services as well. And I'm more than happy to just talk to somebody on the phone and help be a guide for them.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to call it a wrap there. And thank you so much for your time, Brian Bowen. And you certainly learned a ton since that first phone call at 18. So I'm really impressed. We will see you back again soon.
Thanks for having me, Jill. Appreciate it.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.